Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to Screen Talk. This is Ann Thompson, editor-at-large of IndieWire. And this week, replacing Eric Cohn, who's on vacation, well-deserved, is our box office editor, Tom Brueggemann, from Palm Springs, California. Tom, welcome to Screen Talk. I know you've been on with Eric before. This is the first time we've done it together.
I appreciate the opportunity. How are you?
I'm good. So box office editor, in the pandemic, you have gone on to become something more than a box office editor. Explain, if you will, a little bit of what you're covering now in order to keep us informed on how movies are doing. How do we measure how a movie is performing today?
Well, first of all, the good news is there is box office to report. Between March and late August, September last year, when until Tenet opened up, or just before that, I stopped doing my Sunday column because, you know, it was ridiculous to report the minimal stuff that was going. So that's key, that box office, which is out there, which is, there are four wide movies opening up this Friday, which is a very high number any time of the year. So there's a lot to report on that. Beyond that, though, the issues are, those are micro things. The macro things are what the future for theaters is, what the future for releases are, how distributors are adapting to changes, how the specialized side of it is a completely unanswered riddle, which we're going to get a lot more this fall post festivals when the award season begins. That's been very sketchy so far, with an awful lot of films going streaming almost immediately.
I have a question. There was a movie that was a huge hit at what was a virtual pandemic version of Sundance 2021, and that was Coda, the one that sold to Apple for $25 million. And it ended up coming out in theaters and streaming at the same time, just a week, just this past weekend. How did it do? How do we measure how it did? How do you think it affects the Oscar hopes for what is actually a typical, totally down the middle, perfect Oscar movie in an ordinary world where you would be in theaters building up word of mouth and having a theatrical hit. And this weekend, it just seemed like there was a lot more attention being paid to yet another HBO series, White Lotus. Talk about that.
Well, the comparison to White Lotus is interesting, but as I've been thinking about this, there is actually a literal apple-to-apple comparison in terms of response, because Apple had Ted Lasso as one of their highest-responded original series. And the honest answer is Apple is, as some distributors, all distributors have the right to block reporting of grosses. Before Netflix started doing that, except for 1 week awards qualifications, nobody ever blocked grosses. But now it's become commonplace among Netflix, Amazon, with Annette, Apple with Coda, Fox Searchlight did it, not Fox or Searchlight did it with Nomadland when it was on Hulu, that we don't see actual grosses. So the only way I can figure out, apart from calling up exhibitors and asking them what they did, is that a lot of theaters have pre-reserved seats. And literally, I have to go on the laptop and check the Landmark or the Angelica website at the time of the showtime and count up the number of seats that have been sold to get some sort of idea, which is, beyond antiquated. And the results.
Analog.
I mean, and they were on two screens each. So I mean, like on Saturday, I didn't do it the whole weekend. I did it on Saturday, and I literally made out a list of showtimes and set my phone to alarm 5 minutes before every showtime to, you know, catch up and get a reading of it. And I did get a sense of, you know, probably both theaters did around 5,000 or 6,000 for the weekend, which is very low for what their potential is normally. But how far is it's, how well is it doing on Apple, you know, where most of the viewership's going to be, where most of the buzz is going to be, we don't know. We don't, you know, there are outside analysts who do, you know, weeks after report on these things with uncertainty of how accurate they are. The other way is to find out if there's an uptick in subscriptions, which Apple hasn't released. So we're sort of reduced to anecdotal and social media stuff. And as I said, there's an Apple to Apple comparison. Ted Lasso got a lot of attention on social media after, you know, it started playing and started developing momentum. I've seen virtually nothing on Coda. It's, you know, like it doesn't, you know, again, I would say
there was some, there were at least, you know me, I'm on Twitter and Facebook, yeah. And you know, there was some Thursday, Friday before the weekend kind of stuff. And they did do some publicity. I mean, there were articles about it, interviews.
Absolutely.
Running. You know, there was plenty of attention being paid. How you measure the buzz, I would say there's no comparison if you've got of a series like White Lotus just unfolding week after week, building momentum, mystery show, you know, what is the reveal in the last episode? Well, I still haven't seen it, so don't tell me. But, you know, you can see it on Twitter that there's just a huge amount of conversation around that. But I don't think any indie movie with no stars except Marley Maitland, an Oscar winner, so she counts as someone with a name. I don't think any movie like Coda could compete with that.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, let's flash back to a year and a half ago, right before theaters shut down. End of February. What was the big event in film at the end of February? The Oscars. What won the Oscar? Parasite. There was a huge amount of social media chat of that for months as that film went along. That was an active, vibrant film. And you know, that interest, along with its very successful theatrical run.
All over the world, I might add. It was global.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, it had a buzz. It had an excitement. And there have been films, I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood a couple summers ago. I mean, that film was only 2 years ago. That had a huge amount of chat. There are, which was obviously a wide release film, not a specialized film.
With a lot of marketing on top of
it. With a lot of marketing.
Also, I think Apple was spending money on Coda. I think we just have to recognize the limitations. This is what we're talking about with the specialty market, the limitations of a movie like Coda needing that kind of week by week by week buildup in theaters.
Yeah. Yeah, and just to sort of, it's a legitimizing, and box office does play a role in that. There's no question that when films are released, you know, in the awards period, as somebody who writes about box office, I'm very conscious of the trajectory that the way films open up platform and then adding cities and adding more cities and going wide at some point. It's done partially to maximize, you know, the box office and to get the best return financially on the film, but it's also partially to build up a momentum. You know this, you're as much on top of this as I am in observing this, that there's a relationship with the voters and the public that works. And nobody's, you know, Netflix struggled with this, with their releases, you know, they've spent huge amounts of money on it, and they had the goods.
And they've bought theaters in New York and L.A.
And they paid to get, you know, in some cases, to rent theaters that might otherwise be reluctant to play. They made it financially. They gave the incentives, from what I understand, for a lot of theaters to play the films. But they also had the goods. They had the goods with, you know, they had, you know, Roma. They had The Irishman.
Marriage
they had
Story.
Films. Yeah, they had films that,
which actually did business. Some of those films.
You look at last year where they were unable to really get much of a theater play. Did Chazwick? Did he not win Best Actor because it didn't have that much of a theater presence? It just had.
I think that didn't help him. But they also chose. I mean, if we want to dive into this particular detour, they also chose to reveal their films during the pandemic fall, when other people couldn't be in theaters really, and they were almost premature in a way by the time the Oscar conversation came around, where Nomadland and The Father especially picked up a lot of steam at the very end.
Right. I mean, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Sometimes last scene gives something. And the Oscars were very late last year.
Let's talk about what Netflix is doing this year, which I find interesting. Again, they have a full slate of films. They've got the Jane Campion, which they seem to be playing at every festival they can get. And this is because Netflix understands, as these awards mongers go, they understand that getting that valuable word of mouth remember, The Father played at Sundance and got that kind of buzz right at the beginning. People saw how it played in a theater. So you actually have Netflix taking every festival opportunity with Jane Campion and some of their other, the power of the dog, with all the opportunities that they can to get that kind of buzz going from festivals. They even go to, I'm sure they're going to do the same thing they did the year before the pandemic, where they went to a lot of the regional festivals as well. So we'll see if that helps them get that kind of attention. But the next conversation, what is your sense of how Reminiscence. This is the latest theater release, day and date from Warner Brothers with HBO Max. It's a Hugh Jackman movie. It's from Lisa Joy, the one of the co-creators of Westworld. Part of the she's a collaborator with Chris Nolan's brother, Jonathan Nolan. So what is going on with this movie? Is it getting a big push? Is it looking like it'll do some business? What's your sense?
Well, it opens up this week, again, among four wide-release films. It opens up same day on HBO Max, as will the rest of Warner's films for the rest of the year, including Dune and Matrix. And so it's got that, although some films have opened up very well the same date, although they tended to be those that go for a younger, more F9 type of audience than the audience appeal that Reminiscence has. The expectation is that it's going to be a sub $10 million weekend opening, which is, the general expectation on most of the things. It appears that Free Guy's second week with maybe a 50% fall off will be the number one film. It's going to be interesting because it's an original. It's more adult oriented. I think this and Cry Macho, Clint Eastwood's film next month, which, never underestimate the ability of him to draw an audience in one venue or another.
Between the Coasts is his.
Yeah.
Appeal.
Yeah. These are going to be interesting tests.
But it's also
tests.
Adult appeal. The question
it's adult
is,
appeal,
this is
which,
where you're
which
heading,
means
is
that,
who's
that,
coming
that,
to the theaters.
Right, which gets to the point that I think, everything these days, as Bob Chapek said in the Disney earnings call, partially misunderstood in his reference to the next Marvel film, is that Every opening is a data point. Everything's an experiment. Everything is being tested. And Warner's is going next year to what they say is going to be a 45-day delay before it goes on HBO Max. And with the assumption that means that's 45 days without any PVOD or other alternatives.
But didn't people make that assumption with Paramount as well?
They did, which wasn't, and I put back on the wording on both of those, and the wording seemed to be a bit more explicit with Warner's that it'll be a 45-day window, but everything's in sand these days. But the sense is that Warner's, you know, the downside for theaters with the 45 delay is it would appear that films like Reminiscence and Cry Macho going forward, I'm not sure what Clint would think about it, but I'm not sure Clint in 91 is going to be making any more movies, that these are films that, you know, Warner's may say to theaters, we're going to HBO Max. You know, if you want to play them, you can play them, but this doesn't fall under the heading of the films that we're going to have theater exclusive. And they are, they've already announced that they're making 10, 12 original films a year for HBO Max. And, you know, Reminiscence, I looked up, as a budget, something like $68 million. I'm not sure that that makes sense without some degree of theatrical. But yeah, so what I'm going to be looking for this weekend on Reminiscence as a Warner Brothers film is how much it does, how much it would have done under normal circumstances, and what impact this may have on Warner's in the future.
This is a movie. I went to see the premiere, and it was fun. It was fun to go to the Chinese, and it was like stringent safety protocols and everything, and everybody was masked, and it was a nice big screen. It was great to see. It was a good-looking movie, kind of a dystopian Miami flooded kind of, you know, a lot of world building going on. But what it is, in effect, is it's a very Blade Runner-y kind of homage to film noir with a narrator and a story, and it's like taking the private eye concept and turning it into this guy who retrieves people's memories from a tank and solves crimes that way, and it could have been good if Ridley Scott had directed it. You know what I mean? It, Lisa Joy is a first time filmmaker. If this is a very she wrote the script, and it's really quite clever, the premise, but it's a very high degree of difficulty for any director, and it's just so old fashioned. It's just so resolutely, you know, with its feet in the past, that I can't imagine it ever would have been commercial. Really, that kind of film, don't you think, Tom?
Yeah. And again, it's one of the things that's going on with movies right now. It's been in this direction for years, but it's just extreme at this point. Is that, and this was a big deal with Free Guy opening up and doing pretty well this weekend, certainly better than expected. Maybe 60% of what Ready Player One, which is the best comp I could find, did a couple of years ago.
But Spielberg, you know, movie, bigger scale, yeah, I would say.
Yeah. But you know, it's sort of a comparable thing. The Free Guy cost $100 million. Its big deal with the film was that it is non-franchise. It's standalone. It's somewhat creative concept to it, and there was a response to it, because I think that that's what's part of the audience right now is responding to that. You know, certainly
it
with
also looks like it's fun. It looks escapist. Yeah. I really want to see it now.
Yeah, it's you don't assume you know what you're going to see when you come in, which used to be the way most movies were. Now, you know, between how much is given away in trailers and how much things are building on, you know, sticking to the formulas as much as possible, there's less unexpected in movies than there used to be. And with that, because one of the reasons why streamers and series may be thriving more as opposed to the anticipation and excitement for a wide range of movies. That doesn't mean that might change. Shang-Chi, and I mean, it's Eternals, both could be standout Marvel films ahead and shift the narrative around. But we still aren't sure.
A lot of the reporting that I read in the trades about the box office, which is considerably lower than it used to be, you know, it just is. And when I talk to distributors, they just, even the specialty ones, they just say, we're doing our comps, you know, based on a much lower expectation of performance. That's just the way it is now. You know, they're just not expecting to get as much. If you look at box office now, you just don't. Why isn't COVID understood to be a component in why the numbers aren't higher?
Well, the couple of things. One is I am not convinced that there hasn't been a fundamental lowering of people's interest in going to movie theaters. And this is going to sound incredibly bearish and not what, you know, people at, you know, CinemaCon, the movie convention next
Which
week want to hear.
Up next week, yeah.
I think there may be, that grosses may be, yes, there is some COVID impact. And certainly for adult films and now maybe starting to cut in for kids films. I think for Free Guy or films like that, it may have grossed not that below what its potential was at the moment. And I'm not sure that potential is necessarily guaranteed come back. The problem, what I do with box office, and I do this weekly now on a 4 week, over a 4 week period, seeing what the comparison is and the grosses to the same 4 week period, two summers ago, the last time there were full theaters. And at this point, the last 4 weeks, it was about 50%. And part of the reason is films aren't grossing as much as they used to. With the uncertainty of whether it's going to return, I don't know if I'm right that we're close to the maximum. The other thing is just fewer films being released. And that's a huge issue. Hotel Transylvania, the fourth one that was coming out in October, being sold to Amazon, is a big deal. The three previous films combined domestic gross just under $500 million. And the first one was the lowest of them. It's been growing.
I'm still upset about Luca. I'm still upset that they took a Pixar movie, Disney, and put it straight to streaming. That one,
yeah, and
at least go to PVOD. At least make it an even playing field. So you can choose to pay money.
Now, so the issue is, there's one of the most reliable audiences for years, and actually, when theaters started reopening, were family films, and now. You know, there's been with the Disney stuff, with a number of films last year, with Hotel Transylvania now, you're getting, you know, families out of the habit of taking kids to movie theaters. And, you know, if that gets disrupted, there's going to be a few years of kids that lose that initial contact, apart from the fact that theaters need to have as many films released in theaters as possible, irrespective of what their alternatives are. And when you take a film up, you're talking $100 million, maybe that this under current circumstances would have grossed less, but that film might've grossed $100 million in a period where theaters need every single dollar they could possibly get.
I mean, CinemaCon is going to be a great frustration for me because I've, for various reasons having to do with excess of caution, I'm not going to go to Las Vegas and put myself in there. But I'm sorry not to be on the ground there talking to exhibitors because this is a very trying time for them. There's one thing I wanted to ask you about, if you could clarify, because I know you're tracking this. Searchlight and Fox had their own deals that were set up at Fox, and they've gone over to Disney, and their films are being released in different ways than the Disney movies. Can you explain what's going on there?
As I understand it, and it's not complete and total, and I've learned a lot more with the discussion on Free Guy, Fox had a deal. You know, there's films released, you know, before COVID. The pattern was films released in theaters. After 10 weeks or so, films could go on premium VOD for $19.99 or more. And then a couple weeks later, regular VOD, standard priced, plus Blu-ray, DVD retail started. That was the window. So that's two tiers. That's theaters and that's initial paid, home viewing. Then the next level is premium cable, HBO, Showtime, whatever, usually 8-9 months after the initial release. All studios have had deals with cable operators back when cable was, a big deal.
And that's what took them so long to go to streaming. They were unwilling to give up that incredible, lucrative
money. I mean, that was money. And it was reliable. Anyway, Fox's deal apparently was with HBO. So Free Guy, under the current agreement, which expires sometime early next year, I don't know what the date is, and I don't know if the expiration is based on theatrical release dates or when it would be available normally for cable. Free Guy is HBO's to play, I presume, after 8 or 9 months, unless they're given leave to play it earlier. But that doesn't preclude that there can't be PVOD and VOD beforehand, because that's an intermediary step. And Disney hasn't spoken about that. What we do know is it can't be PVOD via Disney Plus. It could just be normal standard premium video on demand.
So they could go to Hulu if they wanted to.
I'm not sure about that.
Which they did with Nomadland.
It may be different. Yes, you're right. That's a very apt point. It just may be that Searchlight has different deals than Fox did.
But it looks like they have some pretty straightforward theatrical exclusives going on for the moment.
Yes, Searchlight does seem to be set for that. That's the indications I've gotten from them. I would assume, like everything else, it's a work in progress. But they're, you know, and again, this goes back to talking about, you know, Oscar awareness and visibility. I expect that Searchlight and Neon and A24 and Sony Picture Classics for certain, and Focus within the their specific 3 week out normal PVOD, but that might be
Universal,
flexible.
Right?
That the main contenders this year that aren't initially streamer based are going to attempt for this year something like traditional platforming.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd probably be 45 days windows rather than what it was before.
Do you think it's going to be traditional platforming, or are they going to go with the wider releases?
Well, I think it's going to be a variation of traditional. Instead of, and actually Fox and Searchlight, actually going back years, has had top films opening up in 5 or 6 markets rather than just New York, LA. And with the problems in New York and Los Angeles right now, particularly in Los Angeles, the ArcLight Hollywood appearing
over
like
there
it isn't going to be
open.
The other
day with boards over it. It was so sad to see.
Yeah, I mean, the expectation is it's not going to be a player in the award season. People hope it's opening by the end of the year. I wouldn't count on that. I do expect it to reopen at some point. But, you know, it's. I think you're going to see maybe 10 theaters open up French, 10 cities open up French Dispatch, and then elevate to 25 the next week and 50 the week after. And which is, you know, which is better for the de-specialized theaters than these, you know, 1,000, 2,000 wide releases.
Yeah, that's good.
Which just kill. I mean, it ends up with a gross that looks okay because the numbers add up. It kills the specialized key theaters because they don't have exclusivity anymore. And it's all at once without the same amount of advertising that is spent for a wide release film. So everybody is lesser accordingly. But yeah, it's a work in progress. It's the type of thing that we'll see how it plays out when it's happening. And I would assume for most films,
it's the type of thing that. So I'm really frustrated that I'm not going to be able to, you know, go there and report on the ground what's going on, because it's a pretty fraught time. What would you like to know if you were going to talk to these people about what's going on and what their future is? What would you tell these exhibitors? What are they doing right and what are they doing wrong? And what are the studios doing to make it worse for them?
Well, I probably would say learn from the past, and that you know, I mean, to state the obvious, one of the things that's happened clearly with the last year and a half is that studios have proven that they are calling the shots and that they can not necessarily do whatever they want to do, because there's an infrastructure of theaters that they still need to take advantage of, but they control things, and that the perception in the past was that, you know, distributors and theaters were half of the whole. You know, in retrospect, had there been a agreement for a 45-day window set in stone that would have been stuck to post-pandemic, they would be better off than they are right now with all this mismatch of things going on. I think that they probably, it's in their interest to have things clarified so that the public knows what the stages are, because at this point, any movie that opens up, you Google the film's title and is X on Netflix or is X playing at home. Every single film public is asking about that. So there's some confusion. But I think the thing I'm most curious about is what plans are going on for alternative uses of their real estate. Because, you know, at the end of the day, movie theaters are a real estate business. They are a business with spaces that they rent, and they need to fill up with paying customers. So what's going to happen?
They're looking for alternative programming.
Right. And that's in programming. I mean, and beyond programming, just
opera or sports or,
you know,
concerts.
AMC is talking about they'd love to have rights to play NFL games so that they can have in a community people come and watch the game together. Now, there's a problem because NFL has its agreements with networks and cables, but they've been able to do this with some in some big college towns,
wrestling and stuff,
I think, you know, to sort of reinvent the idea of events that people want to do together as a group is something that, you know, in past decades when theaters closed, when they were single screens, you know, they might become retail spaces, they might become churches. 12, 14, 16 auditorium theaters don't lend themselves to what they were in the past. So that would be a prime thing. My prime interest would be non-movie related. In the broader
sort of thing. You're pretty dour about where things are heading.
Well,
because some of this is just pandemic behavior. As you say, Warner's is going to change the window going forward.
Well, here's the thing. And you're aware of this as well. What the pandemic did is allowed the studios to move up the timetable of what they were planning to do anyway by maybe 5 years. They were in their, you know, they were planning to set up their streaming sites. That didn't pop up in the last year and a half. Disney Plus was well underway in planning. HBO Max was, you know, Paramount Plus is a more recent one. Sony hasn't done anything yet. Peacock for Universal is evolving. But all that stuff was happening. And it's more advanced in the United States and Canada than it is in the rest of the world. So, you know, if I'm dour, it's because there's going to be fewer films released for theaters. There's going to be quicker alternatives and windows. And I don't know how that shifts. I don't know what changes the dynamic. Now, what theaters have done is that they've cut costs, they've cut show times, they've redone deals with some of their landlords because a lot of these spaces need to have theaters in their shopping malls. Otherwise, it has a domino effect of everything else. So, I you know, there's going to be a less competition in some cases with some theaters closing. So it's possible that the average remaining complex might be able to operate. Film rental's gone down because of when you go streaming, that gets cut back. It's possible that theaters might be able to operate with 75% of the revenue they used to do. It's, you know, instead of the 11 billion plus years, maybe they can survive on 8 billion in the United States and Canada.
Interesting.
Although, you know, some of them, particularly AMC, have huge debt loads that are become due within the next few years.
And they're picking up other film, other theaters while they're doing that.
Well, they're picking up leases on proven theaters that probably,
like,
we don't
Grove.
Know what the lease deals are, but they might be more favorable than they were for their previous tenants. But
just to look back at the past as we wind up here, Ira Deutschman, an old friend of both of ours from New York, has made a documentary about the great Walter Rugoff, the exhibitor in New York, and he has been sort of hand carrying it, it seems like, from theater to theater. I watch him on Facebook and Twitter, you know, really taking all of his knowledge of the old school distribution handbook and just taking this around the country. What do you make of this, and what did you think of the movie?
Well, I was fascinated by it because, you know, I was some extent present at creation when Don Rugoff was a exhibitor and distributor. And in fact, my initial
job. So is it Don Rugoff and not Walter?
It's Walter Reed and Don Rugoff.
I gotcha. Go ahead.
Those were the two big players in upscale, specialized in the 70s, in the late 60s and 70s in Manhattan, and Dan Talbot as well in a more limited way. Cinema 5 was a company, and there had been ones before. Joseph E. Levine with Embassy had been big, you know, a few years before that. But Don Rugoff was, you know, as important for the evolution of specialized as Miramax. He had theaters in the Upper East Side, which were the prime exclusive platform theaters, and he went out to acquire films. And his marketing finesse and picking the right films. Putney Swope with Robert Downey's death recently has been getting attention. Z was a huge breakout. Monty Python later on. The Lena Wertmüller films. He managed to elevate specialized into a little bit less of a niche and more of a breakout, wider attendance sort of thing, parallel to the growth of interest in film that was going on in the 70s. Ira worked for Don for a few years out of college and has now made this documentary. Rugoff was had this huge rise and then big fall, and there was a mystery about where he ended up in life. So it's that sort of the plot, part of the plot device of the film. I'll tell you a very quick story. My first year working, my parents sent out Christmas cards every year, and I was the oldest child and the first one to get a full-time adult job. But they sent me a draft of it beforehand. I was working for a theater owner in Chicago as a film booker. And the first draft was, we're very proud Tom is working for an exhibitionist in Chicago. And I had to explain, because people don't understand that there's theaters and distributors are different. There's retail and there's wholesale. And there's very little stuff that's out there in documentaries or in fiction or in storylines about how the movie business works. So it's anybody who's curious about that, and also about a different era, which is much different from today. It's really a fascinating inside look that still has general audience attention. There's a mystery about, because Rugoff had fallen out of sight after his business collapsed in the 80s. And it's playing in a lot of specialized theaters. Just the title is Searching for Mr. Rugoff, Rugoff. So you can Google that. There's a website. And I would assume that it will have interest down the line on niche home places like Criterion or Turner Classic Movies. It would be ideal for either of them later on. But I would encourage seeing it in the theaters, because the way that the film's set up is that it's getting some extra benefit for all the theaters, because Ira is very much committed to keeping specialized theaters going and alive.
He is. And we can applaud him for that. Thank you, Tom. This was most wonderful and erudite and enlightening, and I knew it would be. And we'll have you back on another time.
Always fun.
All right. Bye.